Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see 100,000, 600,000
deducted.
It. Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor." Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And Master Ronnie saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
That's what you're saying.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalaba slum in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just four toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's three daughters, six-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people.
Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste. Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33 years?
Yeah.
You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
Yes, this space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Mm.
You play in this room.
Mm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here. My another sister over here and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us that mother work aayegi, maja family illa he karega.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage the his salary not for four people.
For the people.
Yeah.
This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
It was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy tiny home, and in this video I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So, let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, but it's currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off this space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost. Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this, which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more leg room when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I have done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway, and this 4-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals, and the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers. The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see what I'm cooking, whilst the smaller fridge allows room on top and down the side to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated because I had the worked up and splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300. And if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a 3-bed house to a 7-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC. And the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization. And with that first video payslip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too. It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish. And I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works. And it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings. And whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees, so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like. You can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I help keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house evaluated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video. And if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here or here to see that video, because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively. And you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
People who live in towns and cities.
Okay, that was weird how that ended. All right, today, and you know what? Yesterday, we've been doing this live stream podcast for a little bit over 10 years now. We're into going into our 11th year. We've done 10 years consistently. I took my first day, sick day off.
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts, so when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tons of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from Solar Now retailers to get their businesses going.
Solar Now is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Of course, it's cold. The beer tastes better. And so I get more customers.
All right. All right, we're back today. Yesterday, like I said, we've been doing this podcast for a little bit over 10 years now. December will be our 11th consecutive year, but took my first sick day off. Took my first sick day off because, man, I ate something that did not agree to me, and I was purging from both ends. I'll just leave it at that because it's getting to be around lunchtime. This neck of the woods, and then for other people, wherever you might be, it might be brunch time or breakfast time, or if you're listening to us over in Asia, it's late night bedtime snack time. In any event, here's what we got. We're going to run a program that we wanted to run yesterday. This is going to be ongoing. So today's podcast is titled, this is titled after what we're doing. It's titled the 180 to 270-day asset challenge. Once again, the 180 to 207-day asset challenge, and in parentheses, applied mathematics. Now, some of the things we're going to cover today, and we can't cover all this in one program, so that every day we're going to spend about 15, 30 minutes on this because we got 2 hours of airtime a day. Sometimes we go up to 2.5, almost 3 hours. But in the next 270 days, well, first thing, we're going to be participating in the asset economy. And we'll go through that in a moment. The asset economy. And our goal in 270 days is to gross $1 million in sales. And we're going to do our basic plan is, because we've been talking about tiny houses forever, is we have two basic types of models of tiny houses. One that will sell for $5,000. So $5,000. So we have to do that. We have to build and sell 200. If we do that 200 times within 270 days, that's 9 months. Well, 180 days is 6 months. And then if we don't make it within the 6 months, we've got a three-month cushion. That brings us up to 270 days. That's 9 months. But if we build and sell, because I figure that's a sweet spot between $5,000 and $10,000. If we do that 200 times, we'll gross $1 million. If we double the price and, of course, add more amenities and sell for $10,000 per tiny house, then we cut that number in half. We just have to sell 100 in 180 days. To 270 days. So basically, we're talking about one a day, depending on what plan you go with. One a day. Working, you know, and we have a formula that we've announced on here before, 7-8-1. 7-8-1. And that represents seven people within an 8-hour period of time, within a 24-hour time period in the day, should be able to produce one tiny house. And we're talking about something that's probably no more than 120 square feet. All right? Now, that's our game plan. Now, you can follow along any kind of way you want with whatever widget that you want. Our widget is a tiny house. Okay, or in some cases, dog houses and all that. But, cupcakes, whatever you might think you want to go with. Now, the reason why I'm calling this the 180-day to 270-day asset challenge stems out of a conversation that I had at high school with a high school friend of mine. And not only that, but just some observations I've made over the last 10 years. And like you take well, on the simplest form, let's say you're behind on your rent payment. You might be behind on your mortgage payment. You don't know how you're going to pay it. Some people might say, well, sell it, get the cash, and pay your debt. And the one thing I've heard, that strategy, sell what you have, that what something that you're living in, the ancestral house, whatever you want to call it. Sell what you have. Now, we're talking about the home or the roof over your head, that house. Because what we're doing is we're going to be making houses we don't have no intent in living in. We're building these for other people to live in. But I've heard basically two strategies over the last 10 years, over 10 years actually, sell it and or borrow money. Those are the two consistent strategies I've heard from people. I can name names, but I'm not going to name names. Over the last 10 years. And something got, this is just 2 days ago, I got to thinking, telephone numbers. So I really wasn't a big math geek or student or nothing like that coming up, but I am now. Because number one, mathematics is a universal language. 1 + 1 on planet Earth is 1 + 1 on Pluto. All right? It's a universal language. And I said, you know what? A lot of problem when you have, when you might be facing foreclosure, you might be facing eviction, you might have a financial problem, personal finance problem, or and lawyers get involved. No, it's not a legal problem. It's a mathematics problem. And a lot of us are basically mathematically illiterate. Well, I know you know how to go. I know you know the basics of 1 + 1 and 1 - 1 and 1 × 1 and 1 / 1. I know you know all of that. But you leave it basically right at that. So it something popped in my head, telephone numbers. Well, all telephone numbers, no matter where you're at on the planet Earth, have 9 digits that make up that are 9 digits that can make up a telephone number. Now, of course, they might not have not, but they, you know, it's from 0 to 9. That's what makes up a telephone number. All right? Now, in the United States alone, just using those 9 digits, there's over 10 billion combinations which make up telephones, not including cell phone numbers, in the United States alone. Just using the digits 0 through 9. Now I'm going back to this friend I was talking to the other day, two days ago. And these other people. Now, you can only think of two strategies, yet, although there might not be an infinite amount, but 10 billion is a lot of combinations. That's a lot of combinations. Just in the game of chess, for those of you who play chess, every time you make a move, there's 30 new possibilities that are open to you. And you just keep on multiplying with each move you make. First move, you got 30 possibilities. The move, you can only move one time, but you got 30 possibilities to pick from. The next move after that, you've just doubled it. 60 possibilities to move. But we'll cover chess on another day. So now, then I was talking to, and I got this from Delmar, that with the alphabet, the English alphabet, because the Russian alphabet, I think, has maybe 30 to 50 letters in it, and the Hindi alphabet might have 30 to 50 alphabet letters in it. But the American alphabet has 26 letters, A through Z. And the Oxford Dictionary, with English words in it, has over 270 words that are made up out of those 26 letters. So then I'm going back to, I said, wait, you know what? For 10 years, I've been listening to people with only two strategies. Sell, because when you sell the ancestral home, when you sell your parents' house, when you sell grandma's house, daddy's house, whatever you might call it, the ancestral house, you have killed the duck. Oh, excuse me, you have killed the goose that laid the golden eggs. Let me give you a real-life example. I have a house in Washington, D.C., and my longtime neighbor, Mrs. Clark, she lived to be 103. She just passed away last year. Mrs. Clark had two children. The two children sold that house. It sold in a week for over $600,000. Mrs. Clark had grandchildren and great-grandchildren that could have used that house to start fresh, to start new, start over. But her two children sold the house, thus killing the goose that laid the golden egg, because her children, and excuse me, her grandchildren and great-grandchildren don't have $600,000 to start the game. The one strategy that they used is sell a house. Now, let me tell you, I'm going to recommend some books that people get that you need to have in your purse, I feel. Because what I'm about to recommend to you, I've got in my lab. The first two books, actually three I've recommended. It's look up online, Barron's Financial Guide. In my hand right now, I've got, and I've had this for over 25 years, Barron's Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. Barron's, that's B-A-R-R-O-N-S, Barron's Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. In this particular dictionary, this is a dictionary, this is a specialized dictionary, has over 2,500 clearly defined terms that are explained. That means you got 2,500 concepts that you can find a strategy other than to sell something. Sell is just one term and out of these 2,500 plus terms in this book I got in my hand right now. Once again, it's Barron's Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. The next book that I have in my hand, all right, is Banking Terminology from the American Bankers Association. You can buy these online, people. I bought them when you, matter of fact, I've had these books since 1988, 89. The books I got in my hand right now. This book, Banking Terminology from the American Bankers Association, which is available online, you can buy it online, has over 6,000 definitions and terms. Sell is just one of them. So I got to be thinking, I said, you know what? Gentrification, redlining, because Washington, D.C. has been gentrified, and a lot of these other terms, is really not a race problem. It's a mathematics problem. If all you have in your vocabulary are two words, borrow money or sell something, you're limited. There's over probably 10,000, well, right in my hand right now, with one book, I've got over 6,000 definitions. And in the other book, I've got over 2,500. So that's 8,500 just in the two books I got in my left hand right now that are alternatives to selling and borrowing money. Another book I recommend you get from Barron's. Now, this one I had to buy my – I don't have this one. I have one other Barron's dictionary. I was looking for it this morning. I couldn't find it. But another dictionary that I recommend you buy, and I had to buy it myself, is the dictionary, Barron's Dictionary on Mathematics. Barron's Dictionary on Mathematics. There's over 800 mathematical terms and concepts that you need at your fingertips. Because once you have the fundamentals, like once you know 0 through 9, once you know the alphabet A through Z, you can make up your own words. You can make up your own strategies, legal strategies that'll help you avoid eviction, avoid foreclosure, and a whole lot of other personal finance problems that you might have. And that's what this 180 to 270-day asset challenge is. Now, I've got some rules for this. I've got 8 of them so far. Number one, and I've got to live by this because I'm participating in this challenge myself. No borrowing money. That's one strategy. We're not doing that. At least I'm not doing that, but I'll put it that way. Number two, no help from the government. I'm not asking the government for any help. Number three, no selling of ancestral property. I'm not killing the goose, because once you sell mama's house or dad's house or the grandparents' house, you have killed the goose that laid the golden egg, and the generations after your parents, particularly their grandchildren or great-grandchildren, they have to start from zero. It's, once again, it's not a math problem. Excuse me, it's not a race problem, okay? It's not a discrimination problem. It's a mathematics problem. Next rule, you can't buy any turnkey assets. We're creating ours. Now, we had to build our own tiny houses, what have you, because it the people that are saying sell it, none of Toyota makes 29.9 cars per minute. Toyota's still a family business. It doesn't have to be cars. It doesn't have to be houses or cabins. It can be cupcakes. Anything you want, pumpkin pie, sweet potato pie, whatever, you know, maybe your thing is sewing, seamstress, whatever it might be, create, make it. Rule number five, within 10 days, and today's day one, you need to come up with 10 strategies on 10 distinct, strategies, distinct zero through nine, gives us over 10 billion phone combinations, phone numbers in the United States alone. All right, so I've got 9 more days to come up with 10 strategies that I have to share, because I'm documenting this. All right, and by day 180 to 270, I've got to come up with 100 strategies, and none of them can include buying or borrowing. Can't involve selling anything. Selling the ancestral. I can't do that, because I'm dealing with ancestral property in my case. And can I deal with borrowing money, particularly from the government? All right. Six, I already said that. In 180 days to 270 days max, we have to gross $1 million. If that's intimidating to other people, we have to build and sell anywhere from 100 to 200 tiny houses, cabins, whatever you want to call it. All right. Rule number 7, because this one high school friend of mine said, well, you got a liability. I said, that's the way you look at it as a liability. And Robert Kiyosaki's book, Rich Dad to Investing, the one golden nugget that I took out of that book is he tells you how to turn liabilities into assets. Now, let me give one example. Listen, I've been doing this since 1982, 83. The first four-unit building that I bought, four-unit apartment building that I bought, two of the units were boarded up and vacant. It was a fixer-upper. So I've got, God, I don't know, what, 40, 41? That I look for problems because I look at liabilities as opportunities to turn into assets. I took that four-unit building, and when I got it, I didn't know nothing about renovating. My mother was around at the time, so one of her coworkers had a grandson that taught me all what I need, the basics of what I need to know to renovate the interior of an apartment building or a house. Later on, my stepfather taught me how to put on a roof, because I paid a roofer, he ripped me off, didn't honor the guarantee. I had just enough money to go to the roofing supply place. My stepfather was living at the time. He told me what to buy. Then we went up on top of the roof, and he showed me what to do. That's how I know how to do a roofing job. But I was forced into doing that because, and I call these the rip-off people really Zen teachers. That really was a teacher. Well, you know what? You need to learn how to do this yourself. So assets, liabilities, and opportunities are much, matter of fact, I would say exactly like beauty. Beauty is in the eye and in the mind of the beholder. What is an asset and what is a liability and what is an opportunity is all in your mind. If you see it as a liability, and that's all you can see, it's going to be a liability for you. I know some people, they specialize in buying fire-damaged buildings. That's all they do. Because for them, it's an opportunity to turn that into an asset. The other thing that I talked to a college friend of mine, and Willie, you know, Milton Smith, and we were talking about mathematics, and he turned me on to a term I never heard about until yesterday, which is liberal arts math. And that led me to another term, contemporary mathematics. Let me read the definition of contemporary mathematics. Contemporary mathematics is a class that studies the practical applications of mathematics. It covers topics such as problem solving, finance, number concepts, art, math, mathematical modeling, financial literacy, dimensional analysis, graph theory, topics and probability, and descriptive statistics. So let me just really simplify this. What we're going to be working on, and just not me, but we're going to look, I'm calling for people, any type of personal finance problem issue that you might have, we're going to be offering real-life contemporary mathematics, applied contemporary mathematics. Applied contemporary mathematics. Like, for instance, one of the terms that I picked up yesterday, just on YouTube, when I was doing some study of contemporary mathematics liberal arts mathematics, was an event. So let's say your rent that somebody is $3,000, or you might owe somebody $300,000 that you want to get out of a house, or you're trying to get $1 million. Well, the $3,000, whatever dollar amount that we're talking about, whatever digit that you're talking about, whatever amount that is, be it $1, $10,000, $1 million, $10 million, if you want to receive that, that's called an event. So with our challenge of our 180-day to 270-day asset challenge, the event that we want to have within 180 to 270 days is to gross, it's twofold. And we want to gross $1 million, but in order to do that, we have to build and sell 100 to 200 times those tiny houses for $5,000 to $10,000. So every time we have build something, once again, we're going back to our formula, 7-8-1. Let's just break this down. One of the first events we had to organize is we got to gather seven people in one place. That's part of the events. There's more than one event that to get to the master event we want, which is $1 million, or the 100 to 200 tiny houses. We had to organize. We had to set a date, get the people. That's seven. Then the next thing, we got 8 hours to build one tiny house. By the end of that 8 hours, that end result is one tiny house. Then we have to sell it. Now, we can go online, setting that whole thing up. So there's a series of events, and then after we successfully do those events to get the completed building, we need to wash, rinse, and repeat 100 to 200 times within 180 to 270 days. Doesn't have to be tiny houses. It can be anything. All right, and it can be done with several combinations, because I'm sure within that 180 to 270 days, we're going to have to switch up and do things in different combinations. Just like, you know what, when you get a chance, take a look at your phone number and look at zeros, digits 1 through 9. And more than likely, you're going to have at least two numbers out of your phone number that are not even part of the 0 through 9 available digits that are available. But we're going to be heavy into contemporary mathematics. You can look up the term online. Because, once again, contemporary mathematics is a class that studies the practical application of mathematics. So the people that live in gentrified cities, gentrified neighborhoods, you might have gotten some letters from lawyers. No, you don't have a legal problem. You don't have a race problem. You got a mathematical problem. So if maybe you need to get back to the basics. There's a bunch of YouTube videos on this topic, but I have in my hand to get the Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms, get the Banker's Dictionary, or the Banking Terminology Dictionary, over 6,000 terms in that, over 2,500 terms in the first one I mentioned, and get, now this is the one I do have to get. I don't have this one yet, but I'm ordering it. Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. A lot of people, when they get a letter from a lawyer or a court, they get all panicky. That's another dictionary all in itself. But no. The judge is not a mathematician. The lawyers are not mathematicians. You'd be better off asking a first, second, or third grade teacher on how to solve your mortgage problems than paying a lawyer $2,500 for legal fees, to be honest about it. And a lot of problems can be solved with arithmetic. Because really, the 10 billion plus telephone numbers in the United States is really just a matter of arithmetic. They're just switching numbers around. There's no calculus involved. There's no algebra involved. There's no geometry involved. It's just, all right, well, we got this number with this combination in it, and so on and so forth. Just remember the fundamentals. 0 through 9, if you know how to work those numbers, you can solve whatever financial problem that you have right now. It can be solved with those numbers, but you just have to know the right operation operations to work it out. And you need to write stuff down. Addition, selling, which is subtraction, because when you sell, you can sell something on a subtraction end, or you can sell something on an addition end. Most people are selling as a subtraction tool. Well, I'll get rid of this to get that. Anyway, that's why we're covering this on a day-by-day basis, contemporary applied into what we're doing. And we invite people to offer, we're soliciting real life personal finance issues, and so we can come up with contemporary mathematical solutions to these everyday real life problems. We've all gone through the math problems of, well, if Johnny had 10 apples and he ate 2 and gave 3 away, well, what about the problems? Well, so-and-so's been living in my property for 12 months but didn't pay for 3 months. Then let a squatter come in for another month. Then I got served a foreclosure letter for this. That's a contemporary math problem. A lawyer, the wrong professional to help you solve that problem is not a lawyer. It's not a court system. It's a mathematical problem. And you need to start thinking that way. And as quicker you can, and these dictionaries help build your, matter of fact, I would even recommend, Malcolm X, when he was incarcerated, he read the dictionary from A to Z. That's what he was such a great orator. I'm recommending people do the same thing with, if I have to narrow it down to one book, Barron's Dictionary, a dictionary now, people, of mathematics. Learn 800, out of that book, there are probably 700 words that the average person doesn't know. But they can understand it, though, because Barron's writes in simplistic terms. You'll pick it up. But, oh, wait a minute, I didn't know about this concept. Anyway, so we're on day one of our 180-day to 270-day asset challenge. So we've got anywhere from on the low end, 100 to 200, because 100 times that we build and sell 100 tiny houses in 180 to 69 months, 200 days, six days a week. But if we If the price is $5,000 on average, we got to do that. We have to do that event 200 times. Let's go to the phone lines here real quick. 773, your mic is open.
Greetings. How are you? I'm getting some
golden nuggets.
Yeah.
And good to hear your voice again.
Yeah, thank you. You too. Great to be on again after a while teaching full time. So I really appreciate the terms that you're using to help simplify the process to these real-life mathematical problems. So I was considering, you know, we could help people with situations, and I would consider it a sense of urgency. So reading that Barron's Dictionary of Financial Terms is one thing. They'd be able to put together a simple word problem, like you said, real-life situations, contemporary mathematics. I was thinking of a friend, Ms. Hampton at Urban Prep. She's a mathematician. You don't have math teachers, but she's an actual mathematician. She's an engineer as well. And just want to share that with her. I'll probably maybe invite her onto the podcast if she can. She's, of course, teaching during the day, but I'll certainly let her listen to this one. She may have a break.
Well, Reba, what we can do is now we do typically Monday through Friday, as you know, but we got weekends open too. So I'm all open to anytime she's available on Saturday and Sunday, we can do a special podcast with her. And then, matter of fact, you just stimulated me to this thought because you're an educator yourself. Between me, you, and her, we can put together a curriculum. But, you know, with contemporary math problems based on real-life situations, because I think that's the way to go.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And actually it'd be something that could be, you know, first of all, we, you know, a lot of adults have complained after finishing high school and even college, they didn't get the economics course. You know, they may have taken, you know, regular economics, but they didn't get the life skills, economic basic knowledge in high school. And it's certainly essential to, you know, that life skills packet.
Right. All right, and one of the reasons why I'm recommending getting these specialized dictionaries is just like, now you're bilingual, so you've got, I forgot how many, I don't know, what, 30,000, 40,000 words in your vocabulary for English, but you also speak Spanish. So it's like you have to learn those words as well. So it's just the same as, once we learn these terms out there, then we have more options on how to eliminate any particular financial situation that we have in front of us. We just have to be, you know, and words bring on awareness. And through your awareness, you can become more resourceful. So, that's why I recommend get these dictionaries.
Yeah. Awesome. And
what do you have for us? Got anything to promote?
Certainly. We're going to have an after-school, the Black Youth Metropolis Fine and Performing Arts and Language Academy. We'll be starting this month. We're going to be there at the Grand Ballroom Mondays and Wednesdays from 3:30 to 5:30. And so there's a $10 registration fee. Parents can call 773-449-8839. Of course, they're going to get the Spanish math tutors. I've already spoken with Ms. Hampton, who's already have a tutoring service outside of teaching full-time. And so the $10 registration fee is to hold the spot, and it's $55 a week. There are payment options through, you know, my website. They can set up a payment plan if they wanted to pay the full amount. So we're going to go into the summer programming for that payment plan. But the after-school program, we also accept for the after-school program, Illinois Acts for Children is a subsidy, child care subsidy program where parents get help with paying for child care. They just pay a copay, and that could be anywhere from $1 to like $20. It's like generally low. The parents qualify, they're not going to be paying, you know, a whole bunch of money. Yeah, the state will pay for income-eligible families. So other than that, the parents can, for the summer camp, they can set up a payment plan. We are going to offer a multi-child family discount. However, I do want to make sure that parents, if they can qualify for the child care subsidy, I want to show them how they can qualify. If they don't know if they can qualify, we certainly I have, you know, several strategies to share with them. And then a lot of times people don't know. They think it's for families that receive state funding like Medicaid, SNAP, or TANF. And the reality is that, yes, those families do qualify. Those are qualifiers. However, the families that are working full-time and have good-paying jobs, they still may qualify. So we just want to look at that. The parents. Other than that, a lot of parents, they have been saying they just want to go ahead and pay. They don't want to, you know, bother with that particular system. So we have options, and they're going to have the young people along with myself. Generally, with my events, I have the young people perform during the first half of the event, and then later in the evening on that day of our annual fundraisers. The adults, like myself, I sing with my band. Lady Reba Soul is my stage name. And then Mixed Company Band is who I've been working with. That's my family. I actually just heard from Duke today. Duke is the keyboardist. So we just want to make sure that families know that children have an opportunity through the Black Youth Metropolis to use their talent as a business. So they always have a way to make some money. Talent could be if they could even teach talent or skill, teach some basketball skills to a group of youth. Now, if they're a certain age, they would have to receive a stipend from the organization. If they're old enough, they can receive direct pay. I'm a grant writer as well. So anyone with an organization, a not-for-profit, 501c3, we're looking for collaborators, not necessarily a partnership right now because we're looking to build the Black Youth Metropolis, but the partnership would also give them access to, collaboration, where they would just come in and do their programming, and I would show them how to get funding, and they in turn would support us, kind of share space, we'd do a share space agreement, and take it from there. So we're basically inviting other organizations to join with us. I'm looking at Delinda Russell, who is a fashion designer, to teach modeling, and others. So, yeah, I've spoken with Jovan Watson of the Jovan Watson Experience. He's an amazing vocalist. We just performed a song by Kindred of Family Soul, and he's at Privilege on Wednesdays, Privilege Lounge here in Chicago. And so I'm just looking to finally collaborate with like-minded individuals and just take these young people to the next level because entrepreneurship is the new, and I won't say employment, it's the new way. Young people, I just bought a $12 scented whipped shea butter from a young lady at the Power of the Woman conference by Minister Erica Williams. So I'm excited about what God is doing, these doors that God is opening. So we're going to be at the Grand Ballroom, Chicago, and for the after school program, and young ladies like Samara, she's going to have her products for sale during our event. We'll just have snacks and so forth available during the after school program. They'll have a snack and you know, snack options, and then get into their homework, and then go into the fine performing arts activities, also arts and crafts, and teaching young people how to do things to make some money. Yeah, and savings, financial yeah. literacy, obviously, is a part of the programs. So I'm not teaching all of these programs. Like I said, Darlinda Russell, she's a designer. I'm looking for a confirmation from her. And, yeah, and so maybe we can have some of these people on as guests and talk about their contemporary mathematics as well, besides Ms. Hampton, a mathematician. Certainly all of us have had to consider what, even if it was at the moment where we learned of maybe what foreclosure was. So thanks for letting me share that, but I'm excited about, you know, what we're doing with this movement too. I consider this a movement, 180-day challenge.
Right.
And we can share this
yep,
with these young people.
180-270-day challenge. Rita,
yeah.
Let me ask you this now. Like I said, you're bilingual, so you speak Spanish. I just looked up, in a Spanish dictionary, there's probably about 93,000 words. But let me ask you this, because you're a Spanish educator, and you give Spanish lessons, but and I'm sure you cover, you know, how to, you teach people also how to count in Spanish?
Yes, and math, yes.
Good.
So, for instance,
good.
To the plus, the addition is actually más, which means more. So, un más
okay.
un, I'm sorry, uno más uno, es, which means is, dos. Uno más uno es dos. So they do advanced mathematics as well, because it's a language. So keep in mind, just like with English, we have calculus, we have advanced mathematics, geometry. So students actually get to learn advanced mathematics in Spanish too. Generally with an annual program, they would start off with something basic, just like the regular high school program, four-year program, they would start off with
right.
the basic things, addition, subtraction, simple algebra, and then advance that way. That's how, because, you know, I'm back in the classroom. And so the freshmen I did not have this year. I just had juniors and seniors. So
okay.
just showing them how to use math, you're just substituting the words. And the comprehension, it comes with, I use different techniques. So I don't just use the comprehension technique in, as we do in the United States. In countries, Asiatic countries and so forth, they use memorization techniques. So the thing is, if you're stuck with using one technique, like in America, generally a student or a scholar would figure out a way to remember or to recall things. So memorization techniques is one. Repetition is another technique, which is like memorization. But connecting the dots is something my dad showed me when I was in high school with the Spanish. So to retain, I made connections with some of the words. What was it similar to? What did this word remind me of in my English language? What could I relate
right.
it to? For instance, the word piso means floor. And one of my favorite foods is pizza. Now, although it's spelled differently, but it has the same, it gives me an idea that I'm thinking about pizza. So the Spanish
right.
word for floor
well, yeah,
is pizza.
I'm thinking about that too.
Yeah, the reality is that I could not, we were doing like word drills and things like that in high school. We had to write the words 5 times each and so forth. However, my dad gave me that tip, and that really catapulted me to another level. I was actually entered into high honors math and so forth. It was really, really exciting because I went to school, a high school. My mom wanted me to have that experience to be in a diverse community in high school, and it really helped prepare me for life. I was not intimidated because they were children like me. I went into high school, as an advanced scholar. And so, you know, I just want to encourage young people, don't be intimidated when you are around others who maybe have a different dialect, diction than yourself. We speak English, and so there are different levels of speech, too. So that's another conversation. But I just want to help to build our young people's confidence. We're also going to introduce to the young people a Little Johnny student workbook, which is a conflict resolution program. It's a life skills and literacy manual, and it's written by
right.
Yeah, so certainly want to give them that life skills component too. So Spanish, I want to give you this tip.
That's much needed. Yeah.
I wonder if I shared this with you before. Spanish is always, you said 93,000 words. So I teach conversation.
One of the dictionaries that I ran across online, that was one dictionary has 93,000 words.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll give you this.
It's probably more than that. Okay.
Yeah. And then the combination of words, once again, because you have to consider, you can have words all day. You can have 93,000 words, but if you don't know how to construct a grammatically correct sentence, then you just have words. You may have an idea
right.
of what someone is talking about. However, you got present tense, past tense, present preterite, so you need to be able to consider that. So I do focus on sharing cognitive. I got this from a YouTuber when you and I talked a few years ago, and you were listening to some YouTubers. You referred me to one, but the one guy said, he said, well, you know, there's over 3,000 cognates. And I realized that myself because keep in mind, you have car, which we used to call cars automobiles. Automobile is an automobile. It sounds like the native tongue. You know, our spoken language. So, teléfono, that's a cognate. And it's a what? Teléfono is a what? We're talking about
telephone.
It now. And then cellular
is a new cognate.
Cellular, because when I was a young girl.
Telephone, mobile phone. Right,
cellular. And so they had a word for that, you know, teléfono móvil. You know, so there's over 3,000 cognates. That's half the battle. So I share that with people just on the go. So I'm like,
would you break it down for people that might not know? Define what a cognate is. We've already given some examples, but for people who don't know what a cognate is and why is it important to learn what a cognate is, particularly when you're dealing with
language. They do teach it in English in schools, but I noticed that even some of my seniors, some students kind of forget, like, what a cognate actually is. They know that there's a word in one language that is similar. So once again, as I shared, it's a word that in your spoken language reminds you of a foreign language word. So it doesn't have to just be Spanish. So a cognate could be a Chinese or Mandarin Chinese word.
Well, yeah, I'll give an example like in German. English, F-O-O-T, in German or Deutsch, it's Fuss, F-U-S-S. Bread,
okay.
B-R-E-A-D, in English, is Brot. Bread in German, B-O-R-T. So, yeah.
Oh.
So if you find out what cognates are in your target language, all right.
Yeah.
That's a good way to start learning a particular foreign language. To see it, even in Russian, and Russian has a different alphabet. It's Cyrillic, but they're English cognates that you can get out of Russian. So, you know.
I'm wondering if that's what the teacher was teaching. We needed a Spanish teacher. We had a sub come in and she spoke. I'm thinking Russian. She was. She was a survivor of the Holocaust. But the one
she could be German.
Well, the words that she taught us for the numbers, it was that's French. It was like, it still was like something like that. And then we got to the number six. It spelled, I think,
All right, German, like Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf.
Right,
like
Yeah, that's Deutsch. That's German.
Okay, so I'm now.
Zwei, drei, vier, fünf, sechs, sieben, acht, neun, sieben.
Wait. You said
11,
sieben,
yeah.
It's seven, but the number six is actually sex. Sex.
Yeah.
So the students, you know, in high school, my especially the boys, they got to the number six, and they were like, sex. But we also related it to that song. It was a house music song where he's like, I ain't fine, something, demon swipe, you know, whatever that phrase means. But
right.
It was a popular song. So, yeah, it was, yeah, I remember that now. But I just remember the number six, it sounded like sex. So one more tip
yeah.
I want to share with you and for the audience is with Spanish, it is one of the most easiest languages to learn because there's only one sound for each vowel. One sound. With English, we have a. We have more than one sound. Some vowels up to like five different sounds depending on the placement of the vowel or the combination of vowels. With Spanish, there are diphthongs, so you would learn those rules too. But keep in mind, the basic vowels, I, A, E, O, U, and then the Y, it has a long E sound. So I just include that when I share the vowels, las vocales en español. The reality is that when you realize that, you'll know that Spanish is not as difficult to learn as English because you want to know how to pronounce the words. And that actually
right.
is my confidence builder with individuals besides my coined power phrases. So I came up with power phrases years ago. And I see some educators and YouTubers and teachers, you know, alike that are using power phrases. And even I've seen some webinars and, you know, infomercials, and it's talking about power phrases. Well, that's actually a term that I coined years ago, not that no one else can use it. However, there are certain things that I want my students to remember, students of RivaLaMaestra.com, to know that you're going to use phrases. Because my dad in high school, just real quick, he was giving me strategies for remembering my vocabulary words. And once again, I came up with the word pizza. So that was the connecting the dots, the memorization technique, besides a word drill. And he said, well, you know, you learn a word a day. At the end of the year, you'll have 365 words. I was like, yeah. I said, but what if I learn a phrase a day? He said, that's right, baby girl.
Yeah, right. That's smart.
You know, so I teach power phrases. So, of course, the words I tell my students when I do my my classes, in person or otherwise, that I don't do word drills because those are words that you're going to connect in your own way. There's no reason to do a word drill because you want to know how to use the words in a sentence, a phrase. And so for me, that's something that they could do on their own depending on their learning style, and I do help individuals to figure out their learning style, you know, through conversation. I do an intake assessment, so I'll see where they are. Some people have some Spanish, and for a lot of people, it's a refresher course. They're like, no, I can't speak Spanish, so we eliminate the word can't, and we just say we're going to refresh your memory. We're going to introduce some things to you that you may never have spoken, but we want to begin to practicar mucho, you know, practice a lot using what you're learning, and that's how you retain it too. Also teaching what you learn, that helps you really retain it, which is part of my fluency.
I like that idea. I like what you're saying, particularly, matter of fact, we're going to start incorporating this in what we do. Learn a phrase a day. Now, the phrase that I'm thinking about, every day that we do a live stream, we're going to introduce a mathematical term and or phrase. So by the end of a course of a year, or we do over 200, 250 podcasts a year. So that would add on to a person's vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
for the people that are just tuning in, one of the things, like for the last 10 or so years, let me give an example, real life using me. My mother passed away, it'll be 5 years this coming April the 14th. And she left, she didn't leave behind any written instructions at all. And I had to, in order to keep what she accumulated, because she accumulated a seven-figure estate. So in order for me to keep control of that, I had to figure out how to do it from zero, literally. Now, in the last, you know, since she's gone, the one consistent thing that I've heard from lawyers, well-meaning friends, have been sell, 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 because I can sell, she left behind a few houses. I can sell one or two of those houses and get that estate down to zero. But if I do that, I would be what I call killing the goose that laid the golden egg. Uh-huh. So if I sold one of my mother's houses, that's killing the goose that lays the golden egg. That's how I look at it.
That's right.
All right, so yesterday or the day before, less than 48 hours ago, yet another friend of mine recommended, and I said, wait a minute. Okay. And part of this, you know, I got to go to a hearing, a status hearing every 3 months or so, you know, because she left behind some property tax that I got to clear. I don't, legally, I can walk away from it all legally. But once again, if I do that, I'm killing the gooses that laid all these eggs. All right.
Uh-huh.
So, or geese, because there's not gooses, it's geese. So, I say, you know what? What I've heard in court for the last 5 consecutive years, because the court hearings are done remotely since the pandemic. What I've heard, and here's some information I've heard. Number one, observations. Number one, every last plaintiff that I've been able to listen, because before they call your case, you listen to other cases, have been a black person. Every last defendant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to say, now I don't listen to everything, but I'm just saying, in the cases that I've heard for 5 consecutive years, at least 2 to 3 times a year, have been black.
Yeah.
The plaintiff's attorneys, I can't even count 5 black lawyers. All of them been white lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
So when this friend of mine yesterday mentioned, I guess to me, the word sell one too many times, because the thing that I've heard out of well-meaning friends and whatever kind of attorney have been the two words now, sell or borrow. Just those two words. Now, then something that came to my head, and I repeat this because I mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast today, that telephone numbers. So I looked up how many telephone numbers are in the United States. Now, why did I do that? Number one, telephone numbers, there's only 9 digits. Telephone numbers in the United States, as well as anywhere else, is made up of only 9 digits, 0 through 9. In the United States alone, you have over 10 billion combinations from 0 to 9 that make up the telephone numbers in the United States, and that does not even include mobile phone or cellular numbers. Over 10 billion. Then I was speaking to another person, Delmar. He said, well, there's only 26 alphabets that make, in an Oxford dictionary, those 26 letters make up over 270 words. This morning in my hand, I have a copy of Barron's Dictionary of Finance and Investment Terms. There's over 2,500 terms in this dictionary alone. And the other book I have in my hand, the Banking Terminology Dictionary, which is published by the American Bankers Association, there's 6,000 terms. So I say, you know what? When I listen to these court cases, it's not a legal problem that these people have. When it comes to gentrification, it's not a race problem. The problem is it's a mathematics problem. Because when you've got over six, just with the dictionary of mathematics alone, there are over 800 terms. But if all you know is two terms, sell and borrow, you're up Schitt's Creek without a paddle.
That's right.
So that's why I mentioned this morning, we're going to start teaching on here at least for 15 to 30 minutes a day, regardless of the topic, contemporary mathematics. Now, if you look this up online, the definition of contemporary contemporary mathematics, and I'm going from Google. These are Google's words, not mine. Contemporary mathematics is a class that studies the practical applications of mathematics. If you're about to get set ass out on the street due to a conviction or foreclosure, back taxes on a property, that is contemporary economics. We're no longer talking about if Johnny had 10 apples and ate three of them and gave one away. No, we're dealing with if you miss 2 months worth of payments, you got a court order for 30 days, the quit or vacate, you got a court hearing in so many days. That is a contemporary mathematical problem. It is not a legal problem.
Mm-hmm. And once
so,
again, I helped the one
lady. The next 180 to 270, right. The next 180 to 270 days, because, like, for instance, let's say whatever amount of money that you might need, $1,000, $300,000, $30,000, whatever. When you let me really simplify it. When you get a payday or when you receive any kind of money in your hand or PayPal account or whatever it might be, that is a mathematical, that is an event.
Yeah.
That is an event. So if you owe $30,000 or if you owe the tax man a certain amount of money, you need, that is an event that you need to produce. That is a mathematical term. So that's why I recommend, if you don't have one in your library now, go online, look up Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. Order your copy.
And it's 270,000. You inadvertently said 270, but we know you're talking about 270,000 words. I want to share that I had a young lady. She was facing foreclosure. Her education level wasn't to the point where she, even if she saw a term, would be able to comprehend it. It would have to be explained several times. So as I worked with her, I was able to help her to increase her income and then go back, as her God-appointed consultant, because she had visited our church, and the church, you know, they were not in a position to help her because when they, that particular church, you know, was a Lutheran church, if they would give you a loan, you need to be able to pay it back, or they would refer you to different, like, Lutheran social services, different resources. However, when she talked to me, I was warned, because I was young, way younger. I had looked, over her paperwork with her, and I was stopped by former, was he a police officer? Mr. Briggs at the church, Sharon and what's Mr. Briggs' last name? But he said, I just mentioned to him, he was like, well, you know, what's going on? And I said, well, you know, she, you know, the situation, because she did address the church with the situation, and he knew that I was helping her. I said, yeah, well, I'm thinking about co-signing. And he's like, oh, no, you don't want to do that. He said, no, don't do that. He said, you don't want to do that. So I went back to the drawing board because he explained why. Because her debt would be my debt, right? My income would help her save the house, right? However, I would just be adding my name. And he was like, he broke it down. He said, you would never, probably never be able to get your own if you do that. He said, you don't want to do that. And so I prayed and I meditated. I was like, okay, so what can I do? She had all these grandchildren that she was keeping. I said, now this is going to help a lot of people. So you all give God the glory that I'm sharing this with you. God, give God the glory, because I had to meditate and pray on how to help this woman, because financially was one thing. I did have income, but I was newly divorced myself, my first marriage. And, you know, with that being said, I needed to get my own home, which I later did. So I said, are you getting the state child care subsidy? She was like, no, you know, it's just my grandbabies. I said, no. So let me show you how to use that as your income. And you go back and you let them know. Because I did a lot of reading, a lot of things I was learning, you know, the terms and all that. She was with Wells Fargo, which was a D lender. I don't know if they're still a D lender, but meaning pretty much the high interest, you know, a lot of problems with Wells Fargo at the time. But at that time, this is during the foreclosure, right at the cusp of the foreclosure crisis. So she went back, and we were able to talk with the lender, because keep in mind, as long as you're still getting, you know, the foreclosure notices, that's actually your warning. So people, I just want you to understand, my mistake was talking to people who were knowledgeable, but they were just trying to get my property, not only my property that I bought from my mother's estate, you know, as far as even pulling equity out. That's an option to a certain degree, but you don't want to withdraw all of your equity, your HELOC, your a home equity loan you can get for certain things. However, you want to be able to increase your income is an option. But the young lady, she's still in that house today, and she was an older lady, but I'm just referring to her as a young lady. But she was just like, and she could cook. Oh, my gosh, that woman could cook. I was like, wow, you know, so. Yeah, I actually, during that time, I'd stay with her while I was actually moving into my own place. I was coming out of the place that my ex-husband and I had. But, yeah, beautiful home with a spiral staircase off the kitchen. And she was able to keep that home. Yeah, so that's how God used me in that way. Because, you know, we, like you said, going back to the drawing board, doing the math. That was a life experience. She's got these children. The mother is working, right? So God gave me the inclination. Do some, what do you call the math? Contemporary math? This was her situation.
Contemporary math.
So it didn't apply to contemporary math. It didn't apply to everybody but her situation. So when I sat down with her and reading through those papers, you know, and I asked questions. And so I had to tell them that, well, you know, I'm her goddaughter. I'm, you know, we came from the same church. Because, you know, they have to have permission to talk to you, and they don't really want to talk to you, especially when they think you're going to help somebody. Because they would love to just throw the place in foreclosure, and then the bank foreclosure, they're still getting their funds some kind of way. But then after a while, because, you know, they have insurance on these properties. They have some type of protection when they charge you for a house. When you get your mortgage, they have insurance as well. So yeah, so we'll be learning some things like mortgage insurance and the different types. Ben Liddell over at Marquette Bank, he would be a great guest. I'll let you know more about what he does. But my oldest son just reminded me about, he said, well, Mom, he said, Mama, I did take that home buyer's workshop. I got my certificate. Couldn't that help me get a house? I said, well, that was giving you the knowledge of the process. I said, so yeah, that's a step in the right direction. So he's working full time. And so that's the other step, you know, contemporary math. So we're going to connect the dots and see what it is. And so there in Milwaukee, he and my youngest son, so my middle son, we want to get him, you know, out of Chicago too as well. Yeah, so Milwaukee has a lot of land out there. It's really interesting, former Indian territory, and it's like really a lot
out in
land.
The rural areas out Milwaukee.
Yeah, suburban areas. Yeah. And then Milwaukee actually is so small compared to Chicago. I was like, what? You can get across the city in like 20 minutes, 30 minutes tops.
I've been to Milwaukee one time. I stayed up there for about a week, but I didn't explore too much though.
Yeah, it's really nice. I love the downtown. It's my oldest son, once again, he's very observant. He said, well, they don't look like they have a lot of money. I said, well, you know, it's a small city, so they don't get as much money as like Chicago. We have more people, so we have more dollars circulating, but it's really a nice feel. It's not like overcrowded. It's really nice. It's
right.
Almost like going to the suburbs.
Well, like Chicago proper has over 3 million people that live in the city.
Right, we talked about
and that. God knows how many metro and I think Milwaukee's got in the city maybe 600,000 people.
That's exciting to be able to commute too, because that's my son have been out of the city, out of state, but he was the first to go off to college, and he was in Tennessee. So I'd love to just take them. I have a new travel agency, Soulstational Travel with Reba, and we can just move around and just see some different lands. My brother's in Pennsylvania. Once again, I don't know if you recall, I shared before that my brother has properties in Pennsylvania. My family I just discovered a little farm. I want to make sure that is an actual relative, Booz Farms, Booz Family Farm. So I'm going to send you the link.
Mississippi?
So that's in Arkansas. But we have Hickory, Mississippi, is where most of our land is. We do have a farm out there. We have still have the cemetery. I think we had schools. I think we have at least 2 more churches. So we're going to be traveling this summer. Get down there.
Okay,
yeah.
You got a full schedule.
Yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
I'll be calling you later so we can get together with this math teacher. Like I said, what we want to put out here is contemporary math, educate people on contemporary math. And once again, contemporary math deals with real life, everyday, practical solutions. And they're out here because we got to move past just the two strategies that most people just come up with, sell or borrow.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's a lot more to it. So I figured get educated using real life, examples,
uh-huh.
so to speak. And now, Reba, one more time for the what's happening in Chicago before we close out at the Grand Ballroom?
At the Grand Ballroom Chicago, we are going to have on Mondays and Wednesdays, Grand Ballroom Chicago, we're starting our after-school program, the Black Youth Metropolis, Fine and Performing Arts and Language Academy. Of course, they'll be learning Spanish, math. Ms. Hampton, who's a full-time teacher, she is looking at doing the math. So they'll get homework help as well. And the Grand Ballroom is, of course, a luxury venue, so parents will be able to come and see, registering. It's $10. Registration is $10. They'll be able to see the facility where we have weddings. We just had a vow renewal. One of my friends did a 10-year vow renewal last night. Birthdays. I did connect with a young man who does birthday parties for homeless children. So dance parties, private events, I do my concerts there, I produce my concerts there. The address is 6351 South Cottage Grove. Again, 6351 South Cottage Grove, the Grand Ballroom Chicago, Mondays and Wednesdays, 4 to 6 p.m., and they can start coming in as early as 3:30 because some students get out at 3. We do have a resource for transportation as well. $10 registration to hold a seat, and that is basically just to get you'll be able to get a one-day workshop, and if you're interested for the Spanish, so that's what that will cover as well.
Let me ask you this: since you brought up Chicago Spanish, now you have Chicago has a lot of immigrant flow there.
Yes.
How, in your opinion, how important is it for a person who's going to be in that Chicago metro area, which bleeds over into Milwaukee and Indiana, Wisconsin and Indiana, how important or would you recommend a person start to learn Spanish?
Well, it's certainly long overdue. I would say on a scale from 1 to 5, it's literally a 4 or 5. I mean, I would say 5, not just because I speak the language. However, you know, everywhere you go, we have Spanish speakers, and I would personally just seek Spanish speakers out anyway because I'm practicing the language. It's not my native language. Pero la sangre llama. It's in my blood. You know, I've been told that because of my great-grandmother who was French, and the French actually connected with the Spanish speakers, and my Indian heritage, you know, that's a part of my blood culture. But everywhere you go, you're going to see someone who speaks Spanish. And not only in a situation where you may need to help them, you may have a situation. And also the skills. We don't want to not be able to get jobs that are readily available to us. So they're going to be more a bigger call for people who are bilingual because the immigrants are here. So they're going to be workers. You may be a manager. You may be a supervisor. So you're going to need this language. You know, I was teaching as a consultant, parent educator with Chicago Public Schools, where it was parents didn't pay out of pocket. At this point, they will, you know, pay, you know, a small fee. It's not very expensive because I do, like, online. I do webinar, workshops. I do Zoom. Live webinars, and they have an opportunity to get this resource from me. Now, some people are talking about different programs that they can get, names I don't mention, because you can go to RebaLaMaestra.com or RebaTheTeacher.org to learn Spanish. And I'm currently restructuring my website for a virtual version of me. I'm also working on an app so that individuals can actually just get a link to the app or download the app and link to the website or download the app to actually learn Spanish with me. And it'll be, of course, on demand, things that you want to learn. You have a virtual conversation with me using AI, artificial ChatGPT.
Let me share a story dealing with, this is 1980, I don't know, 3 or 4. I had a student when I was in the school system in D.C. She came to class one day, you know, depressed. She was usually an upbeat student. And I said, well, you know, her name was Frances. And she said she had, the day before after school, she wanted to apply. Now, this is like 80, let's say 84. Like, she wanted to apply for a job at McDonald's. Okay. And in Washington, D.C., which was, I guess, still Chocolate City at that time. But she had got turned down from a job at McDonald's. Why? Now, this is 1984 now. Because she didn't speak Spanish.
Yeah, I've experienced that, too.
That's 1984. Now we're in 2024. The immigrants weren't having it. I mean, it isn't like it at a critical mass now. It wasn't like that back then. So if you don't speak Spanish and you live in, check the demographics in your neck of the woods, you need to probably call Reba and start taking some lessons.
773-449-8839. 773-449-8839. So the after-school program is $55 a week. So certainly looking forward to getting our young people into these learning strategies for life skills, using their talent as a business, And actually, our young people, that's what would you say, human capital, where the young people can help their families.
Yep. Yes, social capital. Yes, social capital. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Reba, for calling in. Always good to have you co-host this.
Thank you for that.
We'll update people on a day-to-day basis on our 180 to 270-day asset challenge, which now anybody – now, our assets, the assets that we're dealing with are tiny houses, that type of thing. But you, whatever widget that you might want to come up with is only limited to your imagination. One of the things that will be going at least 15 minutes a day, every day we do a live stream, we'll be doing based on real life cases, is contemporary mathematics. All right. So if you got a personal finance situation, or you know somebody that has one, let us know. We don't have to give names, and we'll I'll be calling you on that math educator. Because we'll put it in word problems that you can understand, and then for those who want to share, because one of the things is, they used to say, show your work, how did you get to the thing, answer whatever.
Right.
But like I say, as a basic textbook, go online to Kindle or Amazon or whatever, and get a copy of Barron's, B-A-R-R-O-N-S, Barron's Dictionary of Mathematics. That's our textbook, all right? And that's going to give 800 terms that I would say probably about 95% of the population not even aware of. It's all in English. But, that's what we say, get the dictionary. And now we're going to expose other dictionaries like we did earlier in this podcast. But a lot of people, you don't have a legal problem. It might end up that way. But it's just like you said earlier, a few moments ago, that when you get that letter that, your property might be going up off, that's a warning. That's a warning letter. That means you got to get your math together.
That's right.
See, a lot of people panic. it's a legal notice, true, but it's a legal notice letting you know, man, you got a math problem, but you got some time to solve it.
Yeah. That's right.
I've been working on a math problem for the last 5 years.
Yeah, and I would just recommend not necessarily going to a whole bunch of people. Like I did, I was pretty naive, and just thinking of the best in people, but your math,
right?
Because we think those people are the experts, but some people, they want to get your property, they want to see you lose it. So
exactly.
They can
and let me tell you, lawyers and judges on a critical mass basis, they're not mathematicians. Your first, Reba, what grade is this lady teach that you're talking about? You mentioned earlier in the program today.
Yeah, that's high school, Ninth through 12th grades,
Well, a high school math teacher is more qualified to help you prevent foreclosure or evictions than any judge or Perry Mason. You got a math. If you're behind on those property taxes, you have a math problem. Now, if you let it wait too long, it'll be a legal problem. But it can be solved. It's going to be solved by mathematics, more than likely arithmetic. Get the book, Barron's Dictionary on Mathematics.
Yeah. And, of course, you're working against the clock. You want to get educated. Yeah.
I'm glad you brought it up. You're working against the clock now. Time, man. Look, well, my mother's estate, I should have been foreclosed on like a zillion times in the last 5 years. I haven't.
Okay.
Simply because I know what to say when I'm in that court hearing, which lasts less than 5 minutes. But now I've got a solid plan all day on simple math, third grade arithmetic, they start teaching 1 plus 1. Is that in first grade?
No, I'm sorry. The basic addition? Yeah.
Yeah, addition. They start teaching that in first grade.
Mm-hmm.
I know, because by third grade, you need to know your multiplication tables and all that.
Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. All right. Third grade math, that's what I'm operating on. Third grade math. Excuse me, arithmetic. What will get you out of your situation is typically the operations of addition, subtraction, multiplication, and division. You don't need no calculus or algebra or none of that other stuff. Those four things can basically get you out of 98% of the financial problems that you got. But it's never been presented to you in a contemporary math formula that you can understand. So that's what we're putting out there every day.
I thought they were like, situations, I would think like, okay, what if I was a grown person and I was driving, you know, you know, because they say, you know, if you drive 50 miles and you're going to get to this place
right.
at this time, how long did it take to get for you to get to your destination? So I thought about life, you know, what if I was an adult and driving, because I wasn't driving, but it was exciting to learn it. So
right.
in my mind, even as a young girl, I'm like, okay, this is something that I would need when I drive. I'm going to need to know this. But a lot of people don't, they just think, like, even with some of my Spanish students, and one student said he wouldn't need math. I don't need the math. No, well, your skills, you're still going to need, what if you are handling problems?
No, you're going
you
to need
know,
it. I used to think like that back in the day when I was in high school. So when I'm going to need, no, you're going to need it. That's why we're doing
but
this thing on contemporary economics.
Answers. Right, and this is something I could tell the young people.
Right.
When you say you don't think you're going to need it, you don't need it. Well, you're not in the real world yet. You're still in the – you're under 18. You're not on
Bingo.
Your own. But in the real world, you're going to need to know some math.
You're not on your own. When you hit the real world, when you're out of mommy and daddy's house or whatever, you're going to need it. So it's best to learn now when you're not under pressure.
Yeah, I want to appreciate, just acknowledge you, because many times and throughout the years of the podcast, you always want to offer something free. Now, we're doing fundraisers with the tiny mobile solar homes, solar cabins. The reality is that you have a giving heart, which is why you are prosperous yourself. When you give, a closed hand can't receive. They say a closed mouth
that's
can't
true.
Get fed. You know, you give and you will receive, because it's the energy that you put out, positive energy. And just to be careful, I know that people will panic, like as I did. You tried to help me when I was facing foreclosure with the house that I bought from my mother's estate, which I sent ahead to do. But I still ended up buying my siblings out. I bought them out, but I had to finance refinance the home to get it, and I'll have my own income too. But you tried to help me with your financially. You had some other things, some tied up, but you certainly.
Well, I know more now than, because we've known each other 10 years. I know more now than that when you first, you know, when we first contacted each other, and then
but
like say yesterday,
yeah.
Man, I did. Yeah, well, yesterday it just finally, I had enough when I heard it from a high school friend of mine. That's why I went back. It's just his son told me, telephones. You got 9 digits and over 10 million phone combinations that are in the United States alone. That doesn't include cell phones. So I just said, you know what, this is something that needs to be put out there. Now, I called a friend of mine that I went to college with in Texas, and he told me that he took a liberal arts math. So
okay.
I looked up in liberal arts math, and that led me to contemporary mathematics. And I said, you know what? this is what, because we've been fortunate to do this podcast for the last 10 years plus now, that, you know what, I'm going to put it out there. And then I'm glad you mentioned the lady that you mentioned, because if we can come up with word problems based on real life situations, you know, and when you get that notice, you got a 30-day notice. You got this kind of notice. Time, if you got a 30-day notice, okay, because once again, ask the words asset, liability, they're all what they are, basically, it's in the, like beauty, it's in the eye of the beholder. So if somebody is giving you a 30-day notice, okay, that's time. Time is an asset. So let's look at that. 30 days, let me open up my calculator here. 30 days and you got 24 hours in a day. You got 720 hours to come up with a solution. That's a lot of time, 720 hours.
Yeah. The
now,
part I want to
you can reach out to through social media. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Rita. You were saying?
Well, the stress of receiving a notice like that, okay, you already know, okay, I'm behind. So it's building up. So the stress, and mind you, I have children. They were young at the time. So you were giving me
right.
some solid solutions, but it was hard for me to think, and I kept thinking I needed to go to somebody. But I was going to the wrong people. And you were like, you can find people. But it was – I can find people because you know I knew a lot of people. I met you through Naima Latif. And even with her, you know,
right.
other people who are like-minded, who have a community heart, not necessarily – to donate, but even throwing my events and things like that. And she's actually come out. She didn't charge a fee. This is part of her work. So the thing is, you know, there are resources in your circle, but the people that you think that may help you, they may not be the people who would help you. It could be your alderman may have a program. So I was going to people, and I was getting referrals. I was listening
right.
to, you know, some radio host and things like that. And some of those people, I've even had somebody tell me with my property in Brownsville, this guy told me, he said, well, what you would do? I said, well, what's the process? He said, I can help you save your home. He said, is it in your name? I said, well, no, it's not in my name. I'm an heir to the property. But he still wanted me to sign over my property to him, and I live in it. And my dad warned me about that over 20 years ago at that time. That, you know, your
right.
house would be in someone else's name and you literally buy it back. And I'm like, that's not helping me because I'm literally giving you my house. What if I never get it back now?
That would have been killing the goose. You would have killed
see, they
the
say,
goose
sign
that
it
laid
over,
the golden
you
egg.
Live in it, right? But this is what the trick was.
Right.
You sign it over and you live in it. So I didn't do that, of course, because my dad had already warned me about that. But you also had told me,
right.
at one point I need like $1,000, and you were telling me to reach out to some people. So reaching out to the right people makes a difference. A no is one out of maybe five yeses. So don't think. Just keep
right.
asking. Don't be too, you know, bashful. Anybody can face foreclosure. Wealthy people face foreclosure. As you can
now,
see.
And Reba, that's a strategy. That's a Reba, what she doesn't recommend is a strategy. Ask.
Yes.
Now, you might have to ask 5, 10, 100 people, but somebody's going to say yes.
Or
to your
start a little business. You like to bake, you know, do a family fundraiser. So things like that are legal. You could do a family fundraiser. They could do the GoFundMe, things
just,
like that.
You just added on two strategies, start a business and now it's commission. That's three strategies.
Yeah,
that's three
and that's why we have Black People Trouble. We're teaching our young people.
Yeah. Right. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, Reba, we all before they kick us off with Blog Talk here.
Okay.
Thank you, Reba.
Thank
I'll be
you.
Calling you this
okay.
afternoon about this so we can get these math problems out here. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day and great weekend.